CBS, Eye on the World, I'm John Batchelor. The Scholar Report with CEO Chris Riegel, Scholar.com, a global technology firm transforming the retail space. We begin with a measure of the People's Republic of China, much troubled in its recovery, if it exists, because of anecdotes. However, Chris provides me a link to a story that piles up five different metrics in China to show that the failure to recover is real. It's not just about Xi Jinping making speeches threatening Taiwan or the chips war at the high end, buy Micron or not buy Micron. It has to do with homely things. Home appliance drop, for example. Starch. Paper in China. And also my favorite, which is plate glass. All of these consumptions are down dramatically, according to the charts provided by Zero Hedge. Chris, a very good evening to you. I've never come across metrics this intimate with how the consumer class is doing in China. Now, for some time, I've been told the fairy tale that China will recover because the consumer will buy. So much of our economy is the consumer and confidence. These charts indicate that that's not happening. Can we extend the consumer use of plate glass to the rest of the economy? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Yes, so one of the challenges with China always is that the government will post economic numbers that no one outside of China believes. So you're always trying to find sources of truth. Those sources of truth can be things such as Trackman Zero Hedge article, consumption of starch, consumption of paper, consumption of glass. I was at a technical conference last week that showed that the production and consumption of televisions in China is off 19% last year, smartphones off 11%. So you're looking for points of data that help triangulate the true story. You know the information from the government is generally not going to be accurate, but you look at things that can't be faked, such as how much copper are the Chinese importing from Australia, because that then translates into other products. It's clear to everyone outside of China that there's certainly been an economic constriction within, even though the government is printing higher and higher numbers to say, nope, nothing to see here.
I've been watching the story of Belt and Road overseas bad loans, very bad loans. $240 billion is an estimate to begin with, and more are coming because there are emergency loans to service the bad loans all around the world. Is there a comparable story to manufacturers, to heavy industry inside China? Do you hear stories about bad loans being rolled over by the People's Bank of China in order to maintain the fiction of recovery?
There are certainly challenges with bad loans. Most of those focus on the real estate sector and real estate developers that have failed or are in the process of failing. One industry that we know very well is consumer electronics. And if I pick on televisions, the Chinese government owns large percentages of the top two producers in China. And when the Chinese government decided that was a national market of focus, they overinvested, built significant overcapacity. So it's not just the challenge of bad loans. It's also the challenge of governmental control of policy, making national champions, misestimating markets, and bad investments within because they're driven by bureaucrats as opposed to entrepreneurs.
I was surprised to see Bloomberg, which is always well ahead of the story, publish this at the end of May. China warnings flash across global markets as growth disappoints. And the talking points, growth expectations revised lower, stocks and commodities unwind the China reopening trade. Chris, it's a puzzle to me. Was this news to Bloomberg or its readers that the recovery was false, that there was just a lot of boasting? You talked about this months ago when you talked about manufacturers looking for business. Did we talk about something that was not accepted on Wall Street?
I think you always have to look at the maybe slightly darker side, which is in the Bloomberg environment, if you wish to maintain that Bloomberg news agency in Beijing, you have to print information that you're told from the governmental perspective and represent that as being accurate. There's always some level of management of the news and of the press from China that here is our official position, here's what you will report. I think in the Bloomberg use case, it may be a little bit of shock or surprise as the truth is propagating further, that it's evident that the numbers are not accurate, and Bloomberg being in a little bit of a catch-22 there of, do you report the truth and risk your position in China, or do you report what the government is instructing you to report?
The loans are bad. The stimulus has not arrived. Xi Jinping is making patriotic speeches. That's one version of what you could say he talks about. And China is acting cautious, or the consumer is cautious. And does that mean they're expecting worse weather ahead? Or are we looking now at just a lack of recovery as opposed to sinking? Can you tell?
Two factors. One, the real estate crisis that started in October, November of 2021 continues to fester, has not been flushed out of the Chinese system, and remains a problem. Two, with the global recession and the lack of orders going into China, that global slowdown has to affect China, because China is the factory floor for much of the world, as it were. So those two headwinds are both difficult headwinds. The challenge from the governmental perspective there is, do you level with the people and say, hey, yes, we're in for a rough recession, not avoidable, not our fault, but here's where we are? Or do you say, everything's great, nothing to see here, folks?
Coming home to America, there are concerns that you have identified for weeks and months, commercial real estate. And I have this from the Wall Street Journal's real estate bureau chief, Craig Carman. The prognosis for urban office districts looks pretty grim these days. Some developers are ready to offload their most challenged office towers at deep discounts. If central business districts are in a rut, many residential neighborhoods in big cities are starting to thrive again. I put these sentences together, and what I think I'm seeing is that Manhattan, not so much, but Stamford, Connecticut, or even Hartford, Connecticut, yes. Do you see the same thing in the Midwest, that the heretofore satellite cities are enjoying a burst of activity while the major cities are not?
The major cities continue to try to figure out what the new reality is. And I'll use the example of Chicago to say that there are many, many large commercial buildings in Chicago that remain materially vacant because of work from home. They're no longer economically viable as commercial office towers and are being liquidated at pennies on the dollar to try to figure out what that next use will be. Because those are interesting assets in interesting cities, will they be retasked to residential or to other use cases? At some point, that creative destruction will find a use for those properties. The question is how long that takes, and then what impact that has on municipal budgets, because the values of these buildings are dropping dramatically. That will send shockwaves through both municipal budgets as well as banks that have to deal with some of these failed buildings.
For people who need numbers to see these anecdotes, this is Bloomberg, I believe. In the first quarter of 2023, investors purchased $489.5 million in Manhattan office properties, the lowest volume since the fourth quarter of 2009, around the height of the global financial crisis, according to data from MSCI Real Estate's. By comparison, volume was $5 billion in the first quarter of 2022. So, a fall off, I don't even know what the percentage is. That's a crash. Sales for the mortgage on 61 Broadway and Silverstein's Fifth Avenue office building could help jumpstart the market, writes Bloomberg, in hopes of better days. Chris, again, it's a puzzle to me. We've talked about this for months. Anybody going in Manhattan can see it. Why are they delayed? They're not worried about Chinese censors here. Why don't they tell people the facts in America that Manhattan is being left behind?
There's a phrase in the lending world of extend and pretend. So in many of these lender scenarios or many of the borrow scenarios, they're hoping for a return to work. They're hoping for reabsorption of excess inventory. But when you look at cities like San Francisco and New York, because the inventories are so large, that's going to take potentially decades to be reabsorbed. And if people are truly working from home, if corporations are not ordering them back to the offices, you may have that fundamental change in the model that says, do we need the same amount of office space post-pandemic as pre-pandemic? The answer is arguably no, but what does that do to change the models where leases and mortgages might be 10 or 20 years? They can't react that fast to that market change.
Chris Riegel is the CEO of Scholar.com, a global technology firm transforming the retail space with digital signage. This is the Scholar Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.